the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast. This is Bobby Golden. Like always, I have Jason Bond with me, and today we got Trent Irby over from Starkville in the studio because he's out doing stand assessments and trying to figure out how many beans we need to replant in the Delta after that big storm that come through and dropped 8 to 10 inches of rain. So how you doing today, Trent?
I'm doing good, man. How about y'all?
We're good, man. We're good. We're trying to plant soybeans too.
Sun is shining. Ground is drying. But like a guy I talked to this morning, he said, just about the time you think you're ready to go, it rains again. And I think you said when you walked in, we got 100% chance of rain for Sunday.
And that's what I checked out this morning.
And today's the, I think today's the breakout day. I mean, I think it'll be, I mean, there's been a lot of people, depending on where you are in the Delta, they've been running this week. But I think today's the breakout day. I think I told you that when we talked earlier in the week. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I've talked to guys, they're turning around in the middle of the field, just anything to get going, you know, earlier this week. And so, you know, eventually you're going to go back over all that doing whatever you were doing.
Well, you know, my phone started ringing right at daylight this morning, and I think your assessment of today was the breakout day is absolutely 100% correct. I've already had calls on three different crops this morning, ranging from the South Delta to dang near in Memphis. So the whole Delta is pretty much in the same shape, and it's funny that we're here in the middle of May and we haven't planted the first time in a lot of places, and we're thinking about planting the second and third time in others. But Trent, you wanted to talk about replant decisions, and I think this year we've had more replant decisions than we've probably had in the last 10 in Mississippi. Is that correct, Jason? You've been here 10 years.
I've been here longer than that. And yeah, I don't remember anything like that. I mean, there hasn't been anything like this. I mean, we said that last week. 2009 was odd for a few weeks, but it wasn't anything like this. And, of course, in 11, what I remember in 11, when the river was so high, it was dry. Out here, you know, outside the levee. And none of us have dealt with anything like this, certainly.
So Trent, in starting that conversation with the guy about I'm gonna decide to replant or not, give me a short punch list of the top five things that are running through your head that you want to know before you even consider to replant.
Well, the first thing,
and it doesn't have to be five, Trent. It could be three.
Or two.
Or it could be 11. Or
I'm going to shoot for
just,
three. How about
just
that?
Just give me, you know, your top most important things before you fail a stand.
Bobby's a clickbait dude.
Well, first thing is the calendar date, and closely, you know, with that, the planting date of the first attempt. So, I mean, y'all know how it's been this year. We have a short window. We plant a little bit, and it rains. We have another short window. We plant a little bit, and it rains. So, you know, we've been going through this off and on for a few weeks now, depending on when that first attempt at planting was made. So, you know, the date, the calendar date, and the first attempt planting date probably are as important as anything else, especially given where we are now in May. Second would be the consistency of the population and what that total population is that's in the field that we're considering whether or not to terminate or spot plant or how to handle it in general. That's going to be the most important things to me.
So Trent, you talked about planting dates, and so if you're thinking about, you said that original planting versus this planting, when does that gap change your decision to replant? So let's say your first beans got in on April the 5th, and today is what, April 16th? I mean, excuse me, May the 16th? Where does that gap have to narrow enough to decide?
Well, this year, that decision is a little bit easier just because of how it has all fallen. You know, some years we have some really early beans planted, and we may be trying to make this decision, you know, mid to late April. Then it's not a big deal to me to replant because you're actually in probably a better planting date scenario then than you were originally. But
we tend to push it some years.
But, you know, given this year's situation, you know, I would fight awful hard to find a way to keep an adequate stand, even though it certainly is thin from anything that has been planted to this point, because we're losing yield potential by the day as we move forward.
So you said that word adequate stand, and I think that was one of your second points. What is an adequate stand? Because you hear a lot out there. We've last several years been running these really high seeding rates in soybeans, but what do you consider an adequate stand?
Well, in a replant situation, you know, that definition of adequate stand is, you know, it's unique, I guess, to that situation. So in the work that we've done, I feel like we can get by with as little as 60,000 plants per acre as long as they are relatively uniformly spaced. No big gaps in the field, no big holes out there, you know, and we have some acres that is the situation, you know, for whatever reason. Maybe it was the rainfall shortly after planting and not necessarily a flooding scenario.
Maybe they were poking out of the ground about the time 10 inches of rain dumped on their head and they got pounded back into the ground.
Or maybe they were just about, I don't know, a couple inches off of having those unifoliates roll out, and that rain splashed all your metribuzin up on them.
Hadn't seen a lot of that yet.
Because the rain fell too hard, it didn't splash. There's all kind of things that go into it, and I know you've done a lot of research looking at replant decisions and those low populations, and I think I made the statement to you last time we got together is even when I plant 150,000 seed, I generally only end up with like 105, 106 at the end of the year. So we're really at 60,000, 80,000, not that far off.
Well, this year it seems to be compounded a little bit more, you know, with the quality issues from the seed that we have to plant. Our germination is relatively lower on the bags that we've had to this point. And there is some supply out there with even lower germination. So we set the planter at 130,000, 140,000, whatever it may be, and we're used to getting 90%+ emergence out of that, and we're not this year for two reasons, environment and the quality of that seed.
So you're saying we just tried to do things like we always did this year, and one, we didn't take into account the original quality of the seed, and then the environment has hammered it as well.
In some cases, it just wasn't a good time for us to have reduced germination in our seed, you know, given the environment that has occurred on planting.
Have you noticed any difference in drilled versus, you know, single row or twin row replant populations? Didn't y'all do some stuff with that?
No, we hadn't done anything by row spacing yet. Everything we've done was looking at an individual row spacing for, you know, we did it single 38-inch rows, but we were looking at removing certain percentages of the population and either keeping that or spot planting, for lack of a better word, back into that population, and then comparing those two in terms of the yield potential at the end of the year.
So, Trent, we had, you know, over here we had this, you know, monumental rain last week, and does the time that a soybean is seedling is underwater, the survivability there, obviously it hinges on the number of hours that it's underwater, but have you ever noticed or heard of anything, you know, varying by texture or anything like that?
No, I mean, just the duration, I guess, of how long that water sits on top of it, regardless of how big it is, really.
And the reason I even ask, you know, you see, to me, it seems like on a field that has more silt content, you get a little more mud on the leaves than you do on a heavier clay soil, and that may just be the observations that I have. That may not be, there may not be anything to that. Bobby can probably comment there. That just seems like what I see.
No, I noticed
and
same,
so that was the deal. Reason for my question. Bobby, do you have anything to?
Well, I think completely right on that, and I guess but clay soils can have it too, and I think
it's certainly
where that seed is trying to come through the ground when that water gets over its head. The bigger question of that, I think, is how much mud can you have on a soybean plant and it live?
Yeah, that's probably the same question I asked a different way.
You know, and I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that either.
But I know there's a lot of soybeans out there in the Mississippi Delta right now that look have more muddy brown look to them than green.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, Jeff commented on this last week, and it's true. I mean, that was Friday morning when we still had, you know, all the water was still on. And, you know, we had fields that were backed up. You know, three quarters of the row was flooded. And then in areas, some of that went back up again on Saturday when it rained. We got a decently big rain again. So how do you make the decision? You know, say it's not three quarters. You know, say you got two thirds of the row, you got a decently spaced population, and then it falls off to nothing. You know, where's that sliding scale for making a replant decision in a situation like that? And I'm not trying to back you in a corner on a question. I know these are brain teaser questions, and there's probably not a right answer.
That's
but
a
what,
real,
what
real
do you
question.
Think on it?
I've had that same exact conversation a couple of times the last couple of days. Anyway.
Or this morning a couple of times, actually.
Very true. So, you know, I guess there's a bunch of different ways that I'm trying to look at it. And you know, first off, let's look at yield potential. So if you've got the top side of the field that the water didn't stand on for and you've got a good stand that's going to survive – obviously, it was planted earlier. You got more yield potential, and you got something you got to do with that bottom side of that field, whether it be a thin stand that just needs a, you know, we can come back to the spot plant deal, you know,
sure.
later, or whether you just terminate it, the half the field, turn around in the middle of the field. What do you do? And from a yield potential standpoint, I think that's the answer. You know, if you can find any way possible just to plant the bottom half of the field, you keep the top. But when you really think about management and irrigation, things of that nature, you got two different crops in the same field. How do you manage the bottom half with what the top half's doing and vice versa? So do you at the end of the day lose everything in the bottom half that you would have gained from the top half, you know, with your management? So it's a difficult thing to me. And I think we're just going to have to play each one of those by ear as this water comes off and as we're able to get a machine back in there to do something. If there's a great big disparity in size of the crop, the growth stage of the crop, you know, in some cases we're going to be better off terminating and starting completely over.
And that was my next question related to that. You know, the fields that did, say, the bottom half flooded, a lot of those – you know, you still got water in the middle there. You know, there's not even – you're not getting back in them this week, certainly. And then, you know, we got a big chance of rain on Sunday again. So, at what point are your growth stages too far apart to justify managing it as one field?
I mean, I think if you've got – let's just say we have a first planting of, you know, 2 weeks ago. Let's say they've been in the ground 2 weeks, and we're able to get in there in the very near future – I don't think that's too big of a gap, but if it rains again this weekend, you know, the water obviously is not going to come off, you know, between now, some of these fields anyway, between now and the weekend, and you're looking at another 10 days to 2 weeks, then, you know, that's a pretty big gap. And the work that I had mentioned earlier where we had planted into existing stands, you know, 3 to 4 weeks had gone by between those two planting attempts. So there was an age difference there between the two crops growing on the same row, but it wasn't enough that it became problematic at harvest, which would be my biggest concern.
Now, does it make that decision harder being in soybeans that you have data saying you can do that or you can plant the bottom end of the field versus a crop like, you know, corn where, as Jason always says, it's so genetically engineered that it's a powerhouse and you can't plant behind it or you can't plant in the row or you're going to lose yield. You know, soybeans are different. So does it make the decision tougher to keep it?
Well, I mean,
because you have more options.
You have a lot more options. You're right. And like I mentioned earlier, I'm looking for reasons to keep stands at this point because of the calendar date and the yield potential. You know, some data suggests that we lose nearly, you know, roughly 2.8 bushels a week, I guess, you know, after mid-April, late April, moving forward. So we know we're losing yield potential by the day, and anything that has been planted, you know, to this point is at an advantage. But, you know, at the same time, you've got to weigh the logistics of things and how you're even going to be able to make that crop. Are you really going to gain anything out of keeping that higher yield potential?
So you take that 2.8 bushels, right, and you look at what you've lost versus what your data says potential stand loss issues will be, and you match them up, and that's kind of how you make that decision.
That's right. I don't like, you know, it's not accurate to say field by field basis, but it definitely is a situation by situation basis to make this decision. Well, the one thing I guess that we can mention on that similar front would be the maturity group deal. You know, it is May the 16th, and I've gotten a lot of calls this week on, as we move forward, do we target a different maturity group than what we were originally planning? And, you know, the vast majority of what we would have planted to this point would be, you know, maturity groups, you know, 4.4 up to 4.8, 4.9.
Well, you know my thoughts on that, so
I would welcome your comments, Bobby, on some of the work that you were a part of a couple of years ago.
If you're going with the data and you live in the Mid-South, you plan a group 4, and you can't do any better than that.
Bottom line.
Period.
What I've been telling people on the phone this week is that, you know, it feels like we're late. You know, we are middle of May, but based on those data, we still are in an advantage to the group 4 in terms of yield. If we are pushed into June for some reason, which is a possibility at this point, we may lose the advantage to that group 4, but it's still going to yield about the same as a group 3 or a group 5. But the shorter season varieties would hold the advantage to coming out of the field a little bit faster at the end of the year.
Right. And, you know, the thing about the group 4s is, and I think it's twofold, it's not that group 4s are just that much better than everything else, it's that all the genetic diversity that they have incorporated into, we've been breeding group 4s for the Mid-South now. That's where our
Absolutely.
Focus and the breeding efforts been. So I think
there's just a lot of good options in that maturity group range.
Yeah, so before we move off of agronomics, go ahead.
Well, I hate to keep playing devil's advocate, but, you know, we talked about seed quality, and there was also an issue with seed quantity, going into 2019. So we've had some corn acres that failed, that some of those acres went to soybeans, some went back to corn and cotton or whatever else, but some went to soybeans. And now we're in areas, you know, dealing with replanting soybeans, and we're getting later. And as we already got low seed quality in some varieties and then limited seed quantity. So what do you tell a guy that, you know, he's going to replant soybeans, he can't lay hands on the variety he wants? You know, what do you look for in making a decision on going with his backup or backup to his backup variety?
Because I think your short list is really short now, Trent.
It's really short. You know, if I'm looking for a positive thing in this conversation, it's the fact that we are only 30-something percent planted as a state. So there's a lot of seed from that was intended to have already been planted still sitting ready to go into the planter. But those acres that have been planted that will need to be replanted, or the other situations you just described, you know, in that kind of situation, you know, my advice is just simply to tell them to look for, you know, the best thing that they can get their hands on, you know, because it is a short supply. I've talked to some folks yesterday talking about trying to get their hands on additional varieties for people to replant, and that option list is going to be maybe even reduced further than what we even have data on. It may be a bunch of new varieties. It may be maybe things that we're not used to planting around here to be able to have.
Do you get to a point where the price of soybeans and the planting date and the choice of variety puts you in a no-win situation?
Yes, you do.
But before you completely answer that, tell us what the prevented planting date for soybeans.
So, best of my memory, the cutoff date for full season soybeans is June 15th.
So how does that factor into Jason's question?
So as we, you know, as we move forward, we got yield potential to consider. And one thing that I do want to say, I've had this conversation this week as well. You know, oftentimes we can only manage our expectations off of averages, right? Well, that doesn't mean that we're not going to have a good yield if we plant a crop right now. There's a lot of season to go. We don't really know what's going to happen. What we do know is that what we plant today and moving forward is not likely going to yield to the same level of what we would have planted 2 weeks ago would have. Now, whether that's 80 bushel beans, 90 bushel beans, or 60 bushel beans, that's anybody's guess.
Well, and that's also in a perfect world.
That's right.
And 2 weeks ago wouldn't a perfect world.
That's right. So, you know, these are the cards we're dealt with. We can still plant a crop. We certainly have plenty of time to make a crop. But the market price and the planting date certainly, you know, will play a factor in folks' decision on what to do when that day gets here. But May 16th, you know, for those that can begin to run in the next few days, you know, we're still in a pretty good situation, you know, compared to where we could be. But as the month moves on into June, things will certainly change.
All right, Jason. So we're right here right now, and we're filling all these stands, and probably the majority of those stands had boundary on them already. Where do I go from here?
What I've been telling people, you know, and I touched on this last week when we were talking with Tom and Jeff. I think if your planter's going across the field, and it's the latter half of May, like we are now, you can't afford not to put a residual. For one, just the severity of the weed problems that we have in the Mid-South, and then two, the insurance of everything that's got to be done in the next 2 weeks. You know, if you can save yourself a day or two getting back around on a post-treatment, then, you know, that frees up time to do something else. Now, the question is, and the question that no one can answer, how much of that original residual herbicide treatment is left? And you don't know that. It's going to vary. You know, the situation we talked about earlier where part of the field went underwater, part of the field didn't. You know, there's going to be variation there. So depending on the treatment that was originally applied, maybe you bring that back down a little bit. So for instance, if you did, you know, you mentioned boundary, boundary goes on a lot of acres, or that combination of metolachlor and metribuzin goes on a lot of acres. Maybe you don't do boundary again. One, I don't know what the season max is for boundary off the top of my head, because we use it as a pre and generally it only gets used once. But you know, you could go with something like a dual or a warrant, you know, to get you some more residual on the ground, but not where you're going to really put yourself into the category of expecting to see injury when the crop comes out of the ground, if that all makes sense.
Jason, let me ask you this. This is one I hate to even ask it this way, because when you look at quote-unquote normal years, one thing that comes to my mind and the importance of making sure that residual gets out there is the fact that, you know, it seems like when we get closer to June, our ability to make herbicide applications, the conditions during the day to make these applications, we get fewer and fewer days suitable for such applications, post-emergence type applications. So do you think that's another good reminder to?
Yeah, and I think it, you know, that's what I was, that was my intention with the comment about just having some extra insurance out there. I just think with so many moving parts on everybody's operation right now, because we are so behind, anything that you can do to give you a little bit of insurance and even ease a little bit of the decision fatigue, man, you know, instead of trying to decide, all right, well, I could maybe wait till Saturday, but, you know, I got a couple hours today, I could spray it right now. You know, instead of trying to have that debate in your head, if you had a residual out there, then that's not a debate. You know, you can move on down the list of things that need to be done today, which everybody's list is too long right now. You know, the other side of that, the later we get, the less likely we are to get a rainfall that's adequate for incorporation. And I even hesitate to say that given the situation that we've been in for the last 10 months. But I mean, that history tells us that it's eventually going to stop raining. And when it stops, it might completely stop.
One thing that I have observed, and if you want to share your thoughts anyway on the herbicide activity, you know, some of these beans that did get planted really early have just not grown much. I mean, you know, I saw some beans last week that were planted the first 3 days of April that were still unifoliate leaves. They've been in the ground more than a month.
Oh, wow.
And they were still, I mean, they were growing. They just, their conditions just haven't been there for them to grow off like they would have in a, you know, again, quote unquote, normal year. So when we have that longer time from emergence to actually achieving a canopy, what might we expect?
Well, you expect a longer time from emergence to canopy, and it's got to be managed for that lengthier time. I mean, I think it's as simple as that. So it's likely that an additional post-treatment that includes a residual is going to have to be made. So, for example, if we're accustomed to planting with some pre-treatment and then doing a post-treatment of Roundup and Prefix, or, you know, Roundup dicamba plus whatever residual, and then canopy, it may require an additional application there that we weren't planning for or budgeted for.
So I'm just hearing that we're gonna be having to do a lot of scouting in the coming weeks to see A, that we get a stand, and B, that we maintain our weed control.
Well, speaking about scouting, you know, I was talking to Jeff Gore the other day, and we were kind of talking about what's going on in the South Delta with those guys. And where is your cutoff date on recommending to plant soybeans, say, in that area that's currently underwater right now? He was worried about red banded stink bugs.
Well, that's a legitimate concern, and, you know, I've heard our entomologists talk about the issues, and, you know, some of the best medicine for that situation is an early planting date, and obviously we're not going to get into that, but I think you got these cutoff dates in terms of full season beans, the June 15th thing that we mentioned earlier, that's going to dictate a lot of that, but certainly I think we're going to run the risk of having additional issues. And some of these guys, you know, it's going to be July or beyond before they're able to even consider it. So, you know, that's not a recommended situation.
All right. Well, Trent, man, we appreciate you coming by and sitting down with us and taking time out of your busy schedule, because I know there's fields you got to get down the road and look at. So, again, folks, we're here for y'all. If we can do anything, whatever we can contribute to easing the decisions that are being made right now, certainly give us a call, and we will do our best to answer your question.
All right, guys. Thank y'all.
Thanks.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.